All right, welcome back to Getting Committed Podcast. This time we're joined with Oswego Associate Head Coach Mark Digby. Mark is just finishing up his first year coaching the female side of the game, but he's been in Oswego for some time now, I think coming into nearly 10 years. Like, not sure if they give you a testimonial game for that, but hey. So we're super fortunate. Again, it comes on this now. You know, this is different because we're talking now a state school and all the things that go well with that. So, you know, Mark, thanks for coming. And then let's just talk about, you know, your time. Let's just go back a little bit and talk about how you got into coaching. And you're at Brockport before. Were you playing, coaching? Like, what are your hockey backgrounds and what led you to being where you are now?
Yeah, it's been a fun journey here for me since, you know, I was born and raised in Southern California, right? So you're out there in the warm weather and, you know, getting up junior year of high school, sophomore year of high school, something like that. I got tired of the nice weather out there, moved out here to Central New York, and was fortunate enough after I graduated high school to get recruited to go and play at Brockport, and had four really good years there playing on some teams that, you know, I wish we had been a little bit more successful, but, you know, we had a great experience there and was coached by an absolutely tremendous person in Brian Dickinson. And after I graduated, I had to stick around and fulfill a couple internship stuff to finish my degree up, and ended up coaching the high school team right there in town for that year. And then at the end of that season, was asked by Coach Dickinson to come back and be his assistant. You know, and at that time, you know, I'm 23 years old, not really sure what direction I want my life to go, but I know that I want to do something in hockey. And that was a great opportunity for me to get back into coaching at the college level, or get into coaching at the college level rather, and also get to start working on my master's degree. And so getting in there, we took on a team that was, you know, I think they had won four games the year before that I had gotten started there. And, you know, just coming back in, working with the head coach that I knew really well, I think we went on to make the playoffs the next three out of the next 4 years. And I got my master's degree and had a great time there. Was able to recruit the first ever All-American that program had. So, you know, it was great to kind of be a part of rebuilding a program that I was part of as a player. And, you know, and then after my fourth year there, the position opened here as the assistant for the men's team at Oswego. And, you know, the men's program here at Oswego is one of the most storied programs in Division III hockey. And, you know, I was really fortunate that, you know, I had worked alongside the head coach here at some different camps, and some of the alumni that I had gotten to know over the years through coaching. Now, I think they all just put in a good word for me. Plus, you know, with this being really close to where I went to high school when I moved out here from Southern California, it was nice to have almost a bit of a homecoming. And my wife's family is all from right here, so it's a great setup to be here. And, you know, the 9 years that I spent with the men's team as the head assistant, I think we were in the NCAA tournament seven times. I think we went to five NCAA Frozen Fours, played in a couple national championship games, never won one, but we were there quite a bit. And it was great being able to come from a program where, you know, we were really trying to build something, and, you know, getting into the playoffs every year was a huge accomplishment. Hosting a playoff game was a miraculous thing, you know, when I was at Brockport. And then you get to Oswego and, you know, it's the expectations are very high. You know, if you're not getting to the NCAA tournament every year, if you're not making it, you know, past the first round and almost getting to the Frozen Four every year, it's almost looked at as a disappointment. So having to execute some different coaching strategies and a different type of pressure was a lot of fun. And I think it prepared me really well for my new adventure here and in coaching the women's team. And, you know, so far it's been a tremendous experience getting to work with our players here and, you know, kind of getting to take the lessons, both the hockey lessons and probably more importantly, the culture lessons that I was able to soak in working with the men's program now over to the women's program here in Oswego.
All right. So it's, yeah, again, being your first year and coming to the women's side, like, what were you expecting? Like, did you have any, you know, were you thinking something and then it's complete opposite, or do you know what you're getting yourself in for? Like, you know,
yeah, I'd say probably the most interesting year of coaching that I've had, and partially because, you know, I talked to a lot of people last summer and last spring once all this, you know, kind of developed for myself and, you know, just trying to learn of, okay, what is it that I'm really getting myself into? And, you know, everybody had their own opinion and, you know, well, you got to look out for this or look out for this. And talking with the players last spring before they went home, it became pretty clear to me that, you know, it's no different. It's really not any different coaching women, coaching men. People respect honesty. People want to play for people that are upfront and whose behaviors show what they're saying. And they're not going to kind of say one thing, do another, but people who have the right virtues and people that want to run things the right way. And I think this year that was probably what made it as fun as it was we were completely transparent with our team up front, honest. And the players responded to that. When we asked them, when we poked them on certain things and we tried to motivate them in certain areas, it wasn't, you know, do this for me or do this for your teammates. It was just do it because it's the right thing to do. And whether it's hockey or life or whatever, you want to go out and put everything you have into it. And I think that was the most exciting thing about the transition for me, was just getting to see that impact that honesty can have on people and getting people motivated to work for each other. And it's not about what's good for me or what's good for them. It's about what's good for the program. And that was really exciting. And I think it makes the future of our program all that much more exciting.
Nice. So let's talk about, like, you know, last season then. I don't think the season was cut short. You guys finished the year out just about before this kind of blew over. But so let's talk about last season and what are you looking for? If I look down your roster list, you know, you've got some returners coming in, some new players. You won't really talk about players individually, but, you know, what did you learn from last year from the group, and what are you looking forward to in the next year and 2 years specifically? You know, what's your expectations? Do you have a winning culture from the get-go and you expect to be in that NCAA tournament every year?
Well, our program, we've never won a league championship. Unfortunately, we've got to battle it out with Plattsburgh, and they're pretty darn good. Coach Houle's done not just in women's hockey. He might be one of the better coaches that's ever been in hockey. The way he structures his program and the way his team plays is pretty special. So, we have never won a league championship. We've never made the NCAA tournament. And I think with my experiences and now coming over to the team, that's what we're trying to get to. Right? We're not happy. I mean, we're satisfied with how the year went, but certainly we want to use it as a stepping stone to more, not just be satisfied with getting to our league championship game or whatever our ranking was at the end of the year. But a year ago, you know, we're sitting here three games under 500, and now we're sitting here with, seven losses on the year. I think we finished 16-7-4 or something, the 16th ranked team in the country. And, you know, I think it was a huge improvement, you know, just in one season. You know, and I think to go from, you know, a 10-win campaign to a 16-win campaign in 1 year, that's a pretty big jump, especially with having a majority of the roster return. You know, I think it sets us up pretty well for the future. And we want to get it to where consistently we're in the mix to make the NCAA tournament and to where we can challenge Plattsburgh. And obviously, that's not an easy one to accomplish, but we're certainly up for the challenge and, you know, excited about where we're going. And with the group that we have returning this year, you know, we're excited about where we can go. You know, I think we return a lot of our scoring. You know, I think we graduate our second leading scorer, who she'll be hard to replace because she was just nothing to do with scoring, everything to do with the attitude that she played with. I mean, she played the game the right way, a 200-foot hockey player, a very hard hockey player. And, we're certainly going to miss her. You know, our captain, you know, she was, I think she won the academic award for our conference 3 years in a row. You know, not easy to be a 3.98 student when you're majoring in biology. So, she'll be a great doctor here in a couple of years. And, and we're going to miss her on our blue line this year, but, you know, we're certainly excited about the future. And, you know, if we can get some goaltending here next year and returners can live up to what their expectations that they set for themselves were this year, influx with some new bodies to keep the energy up here, I think we can be headed in the right direction.
Nice. Yeah. So I'm just looking at your roster here, actually. And as we kind of delve into more recruitment and what you're looking for, as we look at your roster, like your players come from all over the place, which is really, really going to be interesting in recruiting. Like you've got girls from obviously Mass, but then you've got some players from Honey Baked, from Michigan, from Ontario, one girl from Manasquan, which is currently where I am right now in Jersey while we blow over this coronavirus. You got girls from Illinois, California, Vermont, where else, you know, like if we, so we look down Tennessee, this girl played Penn's Elite before. So it's really interesting then when you talk about, because obviously it's really easy when you're in, let's say you're in Boston, right? You're like Nick from Northeastern, like they got teams all around you, you got prep schools all around you, and it's super easy to walk into a rink and go through. So how do you look at recruiting? You know, do you go on the road a lot? Do you attend showcases? And, you know, what are the three things if you were to go into a rink and you were going to watch a game, what are three things you kind of instantly look for in a player?
Yeah, well, we're out on the road all the time. And Grant, I think everybody is in women's hockey. I think that was a lot of fun for me to see this year, was how active everybody is in recruiting. I don't know if there's a showcase that I went to or a game that I attended that there wasn't somebody else there. So, you know, it's great for the game to have that many coaches that are passionate about what they're doing and that are trying to make their programs better, but also makes it harder for us, right? Because you want to make sure that you're doing everything you can to be better than everybody else. So, as far as what we look for in players, where they're from doesn't mean a ton. Granted, being a state school, you know, I think the recruitment process is probably a little bit easier for New York players, which I think, you know, in the future for us will probably be a little bit heavier based here in New York, just because the ease of finding players that, you know what, they have some local tie, they know a little bit about our program already or our campus already, which, you know, we're very lucky. You know, with our campus, we sit right on Lake Ontario. It's a beautiful area. We play in a 10-year-old arena right on the center of campus. You know, it's got the Jumbotron at center ice, the 3,000 seats. You know, it's a pretty special facility. And so when you can kind of approach a player who already has a little bit of an understanding of, you know, what Oswego is all about, that makes it a little bit easier than kind of going into something cold without a player knowing anything. But at the end of the day, we want the best players regardless of where they're from. And, you know, we want to do everything we can to make our program better. And so it doesn't matter for us. There's a kid from California, or there's a local kid here from Oswego or whatever. We just want the best players and the best people that can help our program. But as far as what we look for in players, right, that's always a fun question to answer because it's probably a little bit different for everybody. I'd say the first one for us is just competitiveness, right? If it's not obvious that you're one of the most competitive people on your team or one of the most competitive people on the ice, you won't fit in with us. And that's a hard line to walk because there's a lot of really skilled players out there, but kids that want to rely solely on skill set, it doesn't work for us. That's not who we are. That's not how we play. And whether you're our most skilled player or a penalty kill type kid, everybody plays the game the same way. And for us, competitiveness that's part of our DNA. And you can try to get people to play that way. But what I've found over the last 15 years is by the time you get to college, you are who you are. And you've either been born and raised to be a competitor or you've been born and raised to be a skilled kid. And granted, you can be both. But most of the time, those both are probably going to Carpe there at Northeastern, right? So, you know, for us, we try to find the next best kids that can fulfill those same responsibilities. And, but like I said, competitiveness for us, that's non-negotiable. That you are the most competitive or you simply just, it won't work, right? We just want, those are the kids that you watch them. And as soon as the puck drops, they're skating around as hard as they can, getting to spots as quick as they can. They're calling for pucks. They're smiling after whistles. They're engaged with their teammates on the bench, on the ice. They work as hard as they can to get to the bench for a line change, you know, and I think those are the kids that just love hockey. And I think that's what separates, you know, people that play hockey versus people that love hockey. And for us, we want rink rats. We want people that want to be at the rink that, you know, class ends, you know, at 11, they've got another class in a half hour. They spend that half hour coming over to the rink, taping their stick, and getting ready for practice. Then they go back to class. Then they come back to the rink. And with our location being right in the center of campus, that's pretty easy to do. So, you know, those are the types of people that we want to try to attract to our program. I'd say the next thing is it probably building off that a little bit is just the way you treat your teammates and the people that, you know what, the whistle blows, do they go up and tap their goalie, right? Do they go up and high five their teammates coming off the ice? When their coaches are talking to them, are they turned around, making eye contact with them and engaging and acknowledging that they understand what the coach is saying? You know, we saw a player last year who coach is talking with her, and she's nodding her head, and I'm watching her. I'm like, okay, you know, that's great. She's doing that. Coach gets done talking to her. She turns around, sits watching the play again. And then lo and behold, she turns around, grabs the whiteboard, hands it to the coach. And you could tell she was asking him to re-explain it to her because she really didn't understand. But her willingness to acknowledge that she didn't understand, grab the whiteboard, ask the coach to explain it to her again, you can just tell that's a kid that wants to get better. And you know, it's no surprise to me that later on in the year, her team's playing in a championship game of a tournament. We're watching just to see how, okay, how is she going to act on the bench? Team's down a couple goals. It's late in the third period. She's the one walking up and down the, you know, up and down the bench, you know, cheering everybody on, tapping everybody, trying to get them going. And we're really excited about what she can bring to our program for the next 4 years. And again, those are the types of people that they love hockey. And you can make those players a heck of a lot better once they arrive on campus. Even if you're starting a little bit lower than what you might have with another kid, you know those kids are going to put the work in. And, you know, so if you can get somebody that's super competitive, that treats their teammates, treats their coaches the right way, you know, I think those are going to be great, great additions to our program. The other skill set that I'd say, the hockey skill set that I think we look for first and foremost is the ability to skate. We like to play the game fast. We like to play the game heavy. And I think in order to do that, you have to be able to skate. And certainly this year, you know, looking at the recruits we have coming in, they're going to make us a lot faster than we were this past year. And hopefully if we can be as competitive as we were this year, you know, I think the team's going to be set up pretty well.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think it's really interesting to note when you talk about these things, you know, you're not looking at, can they shoot in stride? Can they make that, you know, play tape to tape pass? You're talking about these intangible things that don't necessarily show up on the scoreboard or on a player's stats, which is really, really important for a lot of players to note because these are the things that a lot of people can control. You know, sometimes you can't control if you're getting that pass back door and you're scoring that goal, but you can control a lot of these things yourself, and it's the way you act. And obviously you guys are not just watching when it's difficult to, you know, when we're talking about youth hockey, you talk about, you know, individual team success, national championships, all those things are great. But when you are looking at players, you're looking at our individual player. You know, that's a really big note as well for a lot of players listening is, you know, the coaches, regardless of the scoreline there, the coaches aren't really looking at, you know, what you're doing on the ice. They're looking at every single thing you're doing away from the rink. And so that's really, really interesting to kind of find out. But, you know, just talking about your program again, like, and knowing Alexa and what's really interesting about your program specifically, and something that I'm a big advocate about, is how they treat, you know, how does the program treat their players once they're in there? And we all know about equipment, right? Like, equipment is the most important thing, and how to look good, feel good, and all those things, right? Like, if you don't look good, you're not going to feel good, and you play good, it's not going to be there. So, you know, and Alexa, like, she has like Bauer gloves with, I think the palms are like a different color. You know, and her sticks have her name on them, and they're obviously custom with the logo on them as well. So, you know, what are you guys like? You obviously treat your players really well. The place is phenomenal. Players are getting custom sticks. Players are getting, you know, their gloves just like any other program. But it seems like you guys are going above and beyond to make them feel like, you know, they're a Laker and kind of own that, and the logo everywhere they have it. So, you know, that seems like a culture you're building there.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those, as the saying goes, to whom much is given, much is expected, right? And you, we try to treat everything here, even though we're not Division I, you try to treat everybody like a Division I athlete, right? And there's no professional, well, established professional. I know they're working towards it, but there's no NHL yet for the girls. So the closer we can get the experience here to what a Division I program would be, And, you know, from an equipment standpoint, we provide everything but skates. And, you know, all the apparel and everything else, all that's covered, and try to do everything we can to make people feel special. But at the same time, understanding, and we're so fortunate that we have people that understand that because they get all that stuff doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. It just means that you have cool stuff, right? And the work that has to go into that is more important than what you're getting. And yeah, you got to look good, and, you know, look good, feel good, play good. I agree with you completely. But at the same time, when you have all that stuff, you almost feel that little bit of a tighter connection in the community when, you know, an alumni comes back and you see her team, whether it's Alexa or one of the others, they come back and they still got the green gloves or the gold palms. And again, there's just that connection to who you are. There's that extra piece of, it's not just another team. It's not just another program, but there's something special about what it is that we're doing here. And whether that's equipment, whether that's apparel, the time that we take to do individual video with players, any of that stuff, you know, I think all those little pieces, they add up over the course of 4 years. And we want players to leave here feeling pretty good about the experience that they had here. And I think all those little things, that that's what makes college hockey what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's definitely the attention to detail, right? And then those things, like if a team and a program is going to take that much attention to the little things, then what are they going to do for the big stuff? You know, what are they going to talk about when they're doing the power play or the penalty kill or when you're not feeling good, you know, when you're down in the dumps? They're going to be noticing every little thing, and that's going to be really good for a person, I think, and a player going into any program. And, you know, your school obviously does that. So let's just quickly jump back into the recruiting process. So, you know, let's talk about SUNY schools and what's different from maybe your school in terms of another, obviously talking about state tuition and out-of-state tuition. And then, you know, what is something as well on top of that, like, you know, how do you like the first contact? Do you like an email? Do you like phone calls? Or, you know, and then also what we're asking people is, what's a big turnoff? You know, what do players do that, you know, you're just like a big no-no, like something that we've been talking about a little bit has been like the Instagram, like hockey Instagram with the parents and trying to market themselves that way. Like, it's what it is. It's kind of the world that we live in. But, you know, so let's just talk about recruiting. So what is it like for a SUNY school in comparison to another Division III school? Like, you know, what does that look like? And how do you like people kind of reaching out to you?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the first thing I'd say is that there's, in my opinion, I think the state school versus private school mentality is very old school. And I just think anymore, you know, do you hear people talk about how great their school is compared to this school or compared to this school? There are no bad schools anymore. There really isn't. I think every school has something going for them, a different program, different professors, but there's enough people out there in academia that are pushing the envelope that want to make sure that students are leaving their school that are prepared. And I don't think there's any schools out there anymore that fit into the, you know, you hear people talk sometimes, well, state school, it's a party school. Well, every school is a party school if that's what you want to make of it. And, you know, I just, in my opinion, there's not much difference anymore from an academic standpoint between a state school and private schools. Now, obviously, there's some that are a little bit different, right? You get talking to the NESCACs, you get talking to the Ivy Leagues. They have the reputation they have for a reason. And not just are you going to get great academics, but the networking that comes out of that. So it's not to say across the board it's the same, but, you know, I think when you compare state school versus private school, you know, there's just not a whole lot different. And every player has their program that they really fit into academically. Some people, you know what, they might have the grades to fit into a NESCAC profile, but they don't really want that experience. They don't want, they come from a different background. They have whatever it's, everybody's a little bit different, you know, from that standpoint. And, you know, I think that's what makes kind of the surge of academic programs on the state side a little bit more effective, is that, you know, you don't have to go to a private school to get a great engineering degree anymore, right? Whereas our school, we're one of the few state schools that offers engineering. I think we have 3 players on our team that are in software engineering. The sciences are huge here. We have a $125 million science complex right next to the rink. And, you know, like I mentioned, our captain earlier, who's a 398 student in biology, who's moving on to med school next year. You know, and I think that's, again, state schools, it's not just us, right? Not to talk our program up. I mean, I love Oswego. I love our programs and everything else, but I'm not going to say that. Other programs don't have things that are just as good. I think there's other state schools that have strong science programs, that have good teaching programs, that have good whatever. I think everybody has their own little niche that they work within. You know, and I think for us, the science programs are very big. Our communication school is really strong. You know, Al Roker, who's probably down in your area there all the time, in your neck of the woods, I guess I should say, to plug Al a little bit here, but he went to school here. Steve Levy, Linda Cohn, those are kind of the poster children for the communications department. And so we have one of our seniors, actually, I think she's moving on to work for ESPN next year, that she's done great things in the communication school. So, you know, I think we're pretty fortunate, you know, from that standpoint of having the strong academics to go along with the rest of it. And, you know, from a financial standpoint, not everybody can afford, you know, the private schools that cost what they cost anymore. I mean, it's pretty amazing how the cost of college just keeps going up and going up. And it's hard for a lot of people to afford certain things. And it's sad when you put your time in with a player, recruiting a family. And, you know, then you come to find out that they can't quite afford the school. And it's hard when you've built that relationship. But, you know, for us, we're very fortunate that, you know, no college is cheap anymore, but, you know, I think it's at least, it's reasonable for most families, you know, and what you would expect to pay for college is probably right about where we're at. So, you know, I think from a state school standpoint, that's one of the benefits of having the programs that we have.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, I come from England, and it's England, everything is 9,000 pounds flat rate. So it's when you come over here and you hear the price of colleges, it's definitely, you know, getting in 300,000, 350, you know, when you're talking about a Division I commit and how much, you know, what the investment is there from a monetary standpoint, it's just, It's crazy to think. So I definitely think that a state school, and I actually went to SUNY for a little bit here. I went to SUNY New Paltz for like a semester. And my university in England had a partnership, and it's definitely interesting, right? When you go to a state school, and there is a really big, for my time on campus, like New Paltz isn't necessarily a sports university by any means, but I think they were called the Hawks or something, and they had definitely big lacrosse and big soccer team, and it was definitely a place where you're in a smaller environment, but it's very tight knit. So I'm sure that's the same for Oswego.
But yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about, you know, quickly here. You know, what's a big turnoff from players, right? Like, let's just talk about that. Like, what is something that, you know, players are making the same mistakes over and over again? Like, we talk about the email with a lot of coaches and talk about, you know, some people, like, their email is like a continuous scroll. And you're like, is this thing ever going to end? You know, they told me about their cat right now and their grandmother and everything else.
Yeah.
Like, so what are things that you want to know, like, straight away from that email? And, you know, and how's that communication evolve as well? Like, if someone's going to reach out to you, like, do you want to see film? Do you want to be able to see, like, you know, and are you attending any camps and clinics this summer if everything, you know, dies down?
Very soon. Well, it's nice when players shoot us an email, and that kind of, again, doesn't always have to start the recruiting process that way, but it's nice to get on somebody's radar, right? And I know for us, anytime we get an email, whether it's a long, almost overwritten email or just a short introduction to somebody, we make note of it. And the next event that we go to that they're at, we go out of our way to try to see that person. I mean, if they were willing to take the time to, even if it's just Googling us and, you know, pulling up our email address, it's worth the time of walking over, you know, watching a little bit of their game and trying to give some honest feedback of where we would see them. But I think anytime you can shoot an email that has some video attached to it, you know, that's important, right? I think it just gives coaches a little something to fall back on. And because all the coaches know each other too, maybe we're full. Maybe we don't have room for any more forwards. Maybe we don't, whatever position you might play, but you write a nice email, you send video along, we pass that along to somebody else, say, hey, take a look at this kid. Not sure if you got this same email or not. And, you know, that might just help you move on, you know, to college hockey. I think the more connections that you can make with coaches, the more times you can reach out to somebody, just the easier the transition will be for you to go from, you know, playing 19U, 17U on to college hockey. And, you know, I just say that's a little bit of it. And then when you do send emails, one thing that I've found to be pretty effective, because it puts a little bit of pressure on us as coaches, is ask for something in return. Hey, when I'd like to speak with you on the phone, is there a good time that I can call you? Or is there a good time, you know, I can reach you? Whatever, however you want to word that. And that way, it's almost forcing a response. And I think a lot of times when coaches see stuff like that, you're like, okay, at least this has been thought out enough to where you're going to prompt me to do something in return. And now, again, just creates a little bit more connection. And it shows that you're that much more into the recruiting process. You're that much more aware of what you're going to have to do. Because, you know, like you saw our roster with players from all over the U.S., all over Canada. You know, we'll have a European on the team next year. And, you know, I think when you really look at that, you're competing against players all around the world to make a college team. There's just not enough spots for how many good players there are. So that any advantage you can give yourself, that's a huge bonus to yourself. So having somebody, not to pump your tires here, Sam, but having somebody like yourself that's helping these players, whether it's with a podcast, with, you know, just different advice and guidance that you're giving them over the years. I mean, players are lucky to have that now. Whereas I don't think it's really been there for, regardless, men's, women's. I just don't think it's, that type of guidance has been available for players for that long. Probably the biggest turnoff for me, you know, when we're talking about what can players do, that just, it's an absolute non-negotiable no-brainer for us, is the way you treat your teammates, right? So nothing to do. I mean, people could send the rudest email. Not that we're asking for that, but, you know, you just send a bland email. Here's my name. Here's my number. I'm going to be at this event. I'd like you to come watch me play. Well, if we're going to be there, regardless of if you write a great email, not a great email, we're going to go and probably watch you play if we're at that event anyway. But then once you're watching, that's what makes all the difference in the world in terms of, yes, that's a Laker, or no, that's not a Laker. Our assistant and I, we were laughing at one point this year. There was a player that, you know, on the ice, we really liked. She's a really talented player, plays the game really hard, but just no interaction with her teammates at all. So that was the first red flag. Then get her to campus, and 10 minutes into the visit, we're like, no, this kid just won't fit in here. Just the way they act, everything was about them, and everything was about how great they were, and nothing about team success, nothing about trying to make teammates better, but everything about them. And, you know, it's a fine line to walk when you're recruiting, or, you know, as a player, when you're trying to be recruited, because you want to make the best name for yourself. You want to talk yourself up a little bit, but at the same time, you can't be pumping your own tires constantly trying to tell everybody, oh, this, I'm the greatest player in the world, I'm this, I'm that. And, you know, so I think that was one thing for us as a staff that we talked a lot about this year, was finding that balance between kids that are confident enough to believe in themselves, but humble enough to know that they're good because their teammates are good, and they're trying to make their teammates better as well. And I think anytime you run into those players that, you know, again, the combination of no connection with teammates during games, during practices, to constantly talking about how great they were, yeah, that kid's probably going to be a really good college hockey player somewhere, but it won't be here. That just, they won't fit in with the way that we do things. And, you know, we're 100% focused on team success first, individual success second. And, you know, I think different programs probably look at that differently. There's some people that might not think much into the other side of it, but for us, you know, I don't, we'd rather have somebody hurt us a couple times a year in a game than hurt us every day in our culture. That just won't happen. So that's for us, that's the biggest turnoff for us.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a fine line. Like, you know, what is the difference between being confident and being arrogant? And a lot of hockey players, I think in general, if you're a real hockey player, you find it hard sometimes to be talking about yourself,
yeah,
and to be self-promoting. So I think a lot of players kind of struggle with that, and kind of maybe don't do themselves service sometimes, or justice. But let's just talk real quick, because you know, I think this is really, before we wrap up, a question that like always is arising, and you know, like you're bringing in your player from Europe. So now we're looking at the expansion of women's hockey and the expansion of probably college women's hockey, which is growing at a rate that programs aren't able to keep up. Like if we look at new programs being added this year, I think Arcadia with Kelsey's got a new program coming in, Stonehill's coming in as well. So there's new programs obviously popping up, but there's also more players than ever before. And yeah, there is levels to it. Like, especially in Division One side, like the top teams are a lot better, like considerably a lot better than the bottom teams, and the same thing in Division Three as well. But, you know, are you seeing, and when you talk about the men's side, like the average age of commitment, I believe is like 20 years old, or it's just near enough, almost 21. And a lot of players are playing junior hockey for a longer period of time now. Like I'm working with a player right now who's in the USHL, and she was previously committed, but he's going into his second year of USHL. He's going to be 20. He hasn't got a commitment. Another player is committed to, you know, he's committed to Harvard here, and he doesn't even know if he's going to go there. And he was one of the top. He might get drafted this year. So, you know, the level of junior hockey is definitely growing for men's side. But do you see the same developments happening on the female side and the need to play U19? And do you eventually think that the female game is going to evolve and have a junior setup to it where, you know, girls are going to have to develop longer, and because of just the competition for places, and also just because the level of play is going to be so much higher at the college level?
Yeah, well, first I'd say it's awesome that there's so many new programs that are coming in that are, you know, hockey's an awesome sport and obviously we're in it, so we love it. But, you know, it's nice that these opportunities are coming up for more players. And there's, from what I've seen this year, there's so many good players out there that just don't get that opportunity to play college hockey, or, you know, are forced to choose between academics at one school versus academics and hockey at another school. And I think the more programs that have hockey, it just opens up more doors for more players to get in. And, you know, and I think the longer it goes and, you know, the more passionate people that there are coaching these programs, you know, you're going to see them starting to get better and better. And, you know, it just makes our job as coaches that much more exciting that, you know, we are growing the game. And I think we have a responsibility to do that as much as we do to our own programs to try to make our teams better. We want to make the game of hockey better. We want to, you know, make sure it has a long lasting place in the NCAA. And I think the more that we can do to keep adding programs and filling those programs with good players to try to catch them up to speed here as quick as possible. You know, I know Zim at UNE, she's Western New England. She's doing an awesome job. Some of the players that she's been able to bring in, and, you know, even if they might, you know, struggle jumping off here as a new program, you know, she's a passionate coach and she's a great person. And I know she's going to end up doing great things with that program. So, you know, I think the more places like that can hire, you know, coaches that want to come in and be successful and really drive women's hockey here, I think the addition's great. And as for junior hockey, I hope it never gets to the point where the guys are at where, you know, to play Division III men's hockey, you have to go play junior hockey. Otherwise, there just won't be a spot because of the, you know, the maturity, the development, and everything else that those players have had versus somebody fresh out of high school, fresh out of prep school. It's hard to make that leap. Whereas on the women's side, you know, it's 19U is one thing, maybe taking a gap year is one thing to give you a little bit more experience. Beyond that, I hope it doesn't get to the point where there's, you know, junior leagues where players are playing more than one gap year. And even a gap year, I think that's hard for some people, you know, and I wouldn't recommend that for everybody. But if somebody doesn't really know what they want to get into academically, they want to, you know, develop their game a little bit more, it's a good chance to do that. But I don't think by any means that everybody has to do that. And I think, you know, for where our game's at right now, yeah, I think we got a lot of good things going. We've got a lot of momentum going with new programs coming in and a lot of the excitement, you know, that we get, especially every 4 years when the Olympics roll around. And, you know, I know the U.S. Canada series this year was great for women's hockey, and hopefully we can keep kind of that momentum going and, you know, keep building the game here. And, you know, I'm sitting here looking over at my 5-year-old, you know, and hoping that this momentum is still going there in, you know, 13, 14 years when she's getting to that level, you know. And I think there's enough people out there that are trying to do everything they can to build the game. I just hope it doesn't get to a financial kind of the financial piece to it, where people want to keep adding junior programs because they're going to keep charging players because they want to keep making their own piece of it too. Whereas I think there's a lot of good people like yourself that are pushing players on to college hockey. And I think the more good people that you have in the game that are trying to encourage that movement from, you know, 17U, 19U on to college, rather than, you know, pushing people to play more gap year type hockey, you know, which again, some people need that gap year, other players don't. I mean, we're dealing with players right now that are both. Some don't want to play the gap year. Some do want to play a gap year. We don't care one way or another. But I think that progression from, you know, high school into college hockey is still there on the women's side, just like it is in really every other college sport. So men's hockey is the exception, and I think it should remain that way. And, you know, we as coaches should do everything we can to hope that it doesn't get to that point, because I think it just it delays more things and delays life more than anything else. So,
yeah, no, I think that's a really good viewpoint as well on that. And just talking, you know, it's difficult, I think, in so many ways as well, because now you have a youth hockey system that's predicated on the success of national championships. And most youth programs are set up where it's like a selects team and they play in the, they go like, you know, and it's very expensive to play the game of hockey as well. And it's becoming, it's just, again, it's becoming one of these things where ice time is increasing. There is, and a lot of players don't know which is the right way to do things. So if they see a lot of players doing one thing, they think that they must be doing that. Whereas a lot of the time, when if you're really focusing on player development at a youth level, then it should be always about, it should be a play about player development, and it shouldn't be about the wins and losses.
Right.
But then you have My Hockey Rankings, and you have parents who are demanding that your team wins all the time, and playing against the best, and playing AAA, and playing all these other things, and you throw in a lot of different factors into it, and you know, a lot of noise, to be honest, when it really, it does, it boils down to, it's a player, you know, put in this position to succeed, and are they able to get better and get to where they want to be, and what does that journey look like? And I think, like, you know, you talk about bringing a European player in now for next year, and the European league is a little bit different. And when we look at like Division One, like some of the girls there are playing the Olympics, so they miss a year or something else. So it's, again, every player has their own journey and every player has their own pathway. And if one player is ready at that age and one player wants to take a gap year, like you said, like, you have no issue with it. And I think it's definitely a conversation that, like, not one kind of blanket fits all. And it's something that people just
absolutely have
their own internal conversation. So let's talk about this summer, if there is going to be a summer. are you planning to attend any camps or clinics where people can catch you? And then, you know, and then how do people reach out to you? What's your email address?
My email address is mark.digby@oswego.edu. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. And we're actually, if summer ever gets going here, we actually have our prospects weekend planned for early July. And there's a lot of information about that online. So, you know, if anybody else wanted to join us for that weekend, you know, shoot me an email, let me know, and we can certainly get information to you. I know our assistant is planning on being basically at everything that she can be at, she will be at. Megan Ahern does an awesome job of getting out there. There's, I'm not sure there's a rink that she doesn't know how to get to by memory at this point. So, you know, she's at pretty much everyone. Usually I'd be out there too. Mid-July, we've got baby number three coming along. So I'll probably be staying as close as I can to home this summer just to make sure I'm around for my family. But you can catch Megan in pretty much every rink there's a game going on or a practice going on. She'll be out and around. So, if anybody wanted to look into our camp, we'd love to have any of your players or anybody else listening up.
Awesome. All right, Mark, really appreciate your time. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
That went well. That was good.
Yeah. So good. Thank you.